right. Well, good morning and welcome. My name is Jenna McMullen. I'm with Boeing Defense Space and Security Communications, and we really appreciate you taking the time to come see our Enduring Awareness Pavilion. We're very excited about the C4ISR capabilities we have on display here, really across the entire breadth and depth of BDS. With us this morning, we have Roger Crone, President of Network and Space Systems, and Chris Chadwick, President of Boeing Military Aircraft. Each will give about 5 minutes or so of opening comments. Do please hold your questions until we finish the prepared comments section. We'll move into the question and answer session. At that time, we'll have a microphone to go around. Please identify yourself with your name and your affiliation. We do kindly request one question plus one follow-up. All comments today are on the record. And with that, I'd like to welcome Roger to start us off.
Great. Thanks, Jenna. And let me thank you all for spending the morning with us in our Enduring Awareness Pavilion. We're really excited about the ability to put this together and showcase all of the capability that we provide our customer in this area of C4ISR. And I think when you first walk in, you're sort of impressed at all of the parts of Boeing that come together in this pavilion to provide the capability. We go from commercial derivative platforms, the 767, 737, a lot of BMA platforms that Chris brings. You see satellites, tactical air. You see things that we do on the ground, our optical bench, which is out in the patio if you haven't seen that. Some of the stuff that we do for Surface Navy, signals intelligence, all the way to the Echo Ranger over there, little yellow unmanned UUV that we provide on a commercial basis. You really start to get the sense for the depth and the breadth of the Boeing company in the area of C4ISR, and that we're not just at the platform level, but we've really evolved over the last 10 years through heavy investment in R&D and some acquisitions, companies like Argonne and Stitchu, some software companies to provide deep vertical content, which gives us the ability to, if you will, partner with our customer and provide a capability that meets a mission need. Talking a little bit about the customer and where they're at and sort of the theme I think you've heard yesterday from Dennis and you'll hear from us all week is it's really been an inflection point for what's going on in the customer community. You know, we've enjoyed sort of a 10-year buildup because of the issues around 9/11 leading to where we are now. And now in the U.S., we talk sequestration and we talk flat budgets. And if you go around the world, you hear the same thing from our customer set. So our customers need to do more with less, and that means leveraging the capability that they've got, some of the platforms they've got, and enhancing the capability of those platforms with new mission equipment. Some of what you see here today, they're being asked to do more with less boots on the ground, with less assets in theater. And with that budget constraint, we're also seeing a shift more towards the Pacific Rim. You know, we've enjoyed sort of a 10-year conflict where we had air superiority and we had boots on the ground. It's not clear in the next conflict, wherever it may be, that we'll have boots on the ground and we'll have air superiority. And we'll need to provide persistent ISR in denied access. And as you go through some of the different exhibits we have, you'll understand how we have both manned and unmanned capability to provide that ISR capability in denied areas. What you'll also see here is the ability of all of these systems to come together in a mission capability that provides what we call sort of the holy grail of ISR, and that's real-time, persistent, penetrating ISR that drives situation awareness. And what we really strive for is to do a lot of collection and create a lot of information and to turn that into knowledge. And we like to say that knowledge allows a combatant commander, a warfighter, to not just understand the state or the situation, but actually to determine intent of what's going on in that area of responsibility. An example I like to use is around a sea lane conflict. You know, in the past, it was fairly easy to find like a rogue freighter that was not where it was supposed to be, and we could identify that there was a ship there. But with the advent of technology and the systems that you see here, is that we go now much beyond just understanding that there's a ship in a place where it's not supposed to be. With the type of information that we can glean from the systems you see here, we go beyond that state So now we can get eyes on that ship. We can actually get enough information to determine whether it's full or empty. With the ability to do coherent change detection, we can determine where it has been and what path it's on. And then by connecting data fusion and doing multi-int, we can actually get information from AIS, from signals that may be transmitting from that ship. And we can take that information, tie it into larger databases, find out who owned the ship, what ports of call it's been in, and then through what we call our enduring information awareness, we're able to piece all of that together to try to complete the story, which is, I wonder what mission that ship is on and what cargo it might have. Then the combatant commander, maybe PACOM in this instance, can decide, is this a ship of interest? Is this a ship I need to track? Or is it simply a wayward freighter that's carrying a commercial cargo? And that's real-time situation awareness that informs the combatant commander and allows them to complete the mission. Inside this this pavilion hall, you see we're operating what we call the four domains. So you'll see space, we have SBSS and the wideband global SATCOM. You'll see a lot in the air layer, a lot of products that Chris has brought to bear in the large aircraft and then all the way down to A-160 and EMARS. You also see things that we do in land, the border security, the optical bench, the intelligent sensor, the intelligent camera that we have over here. Then you'll see things that we do for the Navy, surface Navy, signals intelligence, and then Echo Ranger, as I said, over there relative to undersea. And you also see the combination of manned and unmanned because, again, we won't always have air superiority where there's a conflict and there are some real mission needs that are best met by unmanned platforms. And then to give you a sort of an idea of how we've laid out the pavilion, if you think about an architecture, all right, around C4ISR that really starts with sensors at the front end, and then moves into computing and platform and operating systems, and then ends up with a data layer. At Boeing, that's how we think of C4ISR. And the ability to have a common architecture around all of our systems and uniquely or carefully define the interfaces allows us to build C4ISR solutions that are scalable and interoperable. The idea of having a common architecture around our platform enables more plug-and-play, allows users to move sensors in and out, and provides a more affordable solution for our customers. And we've sort of laid out the pavilion in the five hubs according to our architecture. So think about persistent awareness as being the front-end aperture sensor. You see SBSS, again, some of the sensors we have out on the porch. And then these three hubs are really about that platform layer with our computing architecture and our operating system. And then over here in situation awareness is down at the data layer. And in situation awareness hub, we talk about the tools that we provide the analyst to take the information off of those mission systems and create actionable intelligence that's then transmitted through networks out to combatant commanders so they can have knowledge of what action they need to take in the AOR to create an effect to further their mission. That's kind of a layout. That's sort of where we are in, certainly in the network and space. And now I'll let Chris talk a little bit about his platforms and the things that they do in BMA.
Thank you, Roger. C4ISR, command, control, communications, computing, intelligence, surveillance, reconnaissance. Turning data into knowledge, persistent and reliable. That's what this is all about. And as Roger laid out, Boeing is in a very unique position to cover the broad spectrum, both vertically and horizontally. And if you look at it, space, air, sea, land, underwater, it's here. We're able to provide that. And one of the reasons is, if you look at the Boeing company, it starts with our Boeing research and technology. It starts with networks and NNSS, networks and space systems, and the broad collection of suppliers and their capabilities that Roger and his team have been able to leverage, and then it filters right into Boeing Military Aircraft. So as you look around, what you see in the different segments, you look over here and you see Scan Eagle. 600,000 hours so far of ISR support. Persistence 24 hours at a time. Extremely reliable. And then you see its Big Brother integrator from the STU-S competition that just happened. It's going to provide more payload, just as much persistence, and it's going to be just as reliable. Just behind you, AEWC, you know it as Wedgetail down in Australia, where we're delivering the capability. We're also delivering it in Turkey and in Korea with Peace Eye and Peace Sun. Unbelievable capability that the international arena has never seen before. You look back over, actually over here with P-8, the newest brand for the United States Navy, P-3 replacement. We're also delivering that to India. We see a huge market for that across the international space as we move forward, again complemented by a lot of the vertical content that we get from our supply chain and from NNSS. And then a paradigm shift, persistence awareness. You just saw a first flight a few weeks ago by Phantom I. This is where you can go from hours of persistent ISR to days and weeks. We've demonstrated it, we'll continue to demonstrate it, and we'll continue to be able to show a broad brush portfolio of ISR and C4 ISR capabilities across the entire Boeing company. With that, back to Jenna.
Great. Thank you, gentlemen. Well, at this point, we'll open up for questions and answers. As I mentioned before, please identify yourself and your affiliation. One question plus one follow-up. Kimberly over there also has a microphone, so if you just raise your hand, we'll bring a mic to you.
Karl Schwarz from Flug Review in Germany. You painted quite broad picture of what Boeing is doing. But some of the programs have their problems, let's say, like the Phantom I crash or crash landing or whatever, like the EMARS, like the A-160T. Could you tell us on these three things how the status is after you're at right now?
Well, if you look at it from a perspective of innovation, innovation is not necessarily always pretty. Things happen along the way. But you look at Phantom I, from any perspective, it was a huge success. Yes, we had a little mishap after landing, but the data we collected, our customers were unbelievably excited. And that's just part of innovation as you go along. There'll be small failures that turn into huge rewards. If you'd like to comment.
Yeah, I'll talk a little bit about EMARS. So the risk reduction prototype is scheduled to fly in a couple weeks. We'll be flying the EMARS EMD aircraft starting early fall. The program is very close to schedule, you know, within actually a matter of weeks on schedule. I think there was some concern early on about the mission and the role between the Air Force and the Army. I think those have actually been sorted out. There's a new G2 who strongly supports manned ISR platforms, and there's now four aircraft in the 14 POM. I think there are two aircraft in 15. So we expect the program to continue, and relative to its capabilities, it's right on track to deliver the capabilities that we presented in our proposal. So we feel good about that. We feel good about the program.
Thanks, Jenna. Amy Butler, Aviation Week. I'm curious, as the Pentagon looks at the task of not only bringing back war material that was quickly fielded, in some cases things like EMARS, fielded with the Army, for example, and some of the persistent surveillance capabilities that may not be useful in in hostile airspace, there's going to have to be a culling down of the kinds of fleets that they keep in service. At the same time, the Pentagon's making the shift to Asia-Pacific, which is going to emphasize things like long range, whether it be sensors or platforms, and perhaps stealthiness or countermeasures to get behind enemy lines. Where do you think that's going to take ISR in terms of both platforms and sensors, whether they, you know, get married up or individual pursuits?
Well, we'll probably both we'll give you some answers. Actually, it's a great opportunity. You know, when you talk about the Army relative to their ISR platforms, they're doing exactly what you said. They want to rationalize the number of aircraft. So they're looking at essentially a King Air 350 and a Dash 7, Dash 8 platform and then a LEM-V. And I think as you go through the different services, they're going to do the same thing. As there was a lot that was done in the AOR in the Mideast to provide a rapid capability, and that's not probably the enduring structure that the forces are going to keep. They're going to rationalize their capability around the platforms that perform. And I think it's a terrific opportunity for us, given our programs of record, to actually extend the platforms that we have. And you know, Chris can talk about the 737 platform and how it's well-suited to Pacific area.
Yeah, I'd answer that in three ways. One is, if you look at Scan Eagle, not only is it the most affordable, most reliable, it is able to get information that some of its competitors can't, that cost a lot more because of the fact that it's quiet and it can go into areas where others can't. And it's also breaking down the walls between military and civil, where it's already had the opportunity a few years ago to be used for Red River flooding. And it's being used out in Washington State right now for some of the for monitoring fires, forest fires. And then you've got P-8, brand new brand from the Boeing Company for the United States Navy, going from analog to digital. And it really leverages and harnesses the accelerated technology that's happening in telecommunications and post-PC computing on the P-8. Now imagine taking that architecture and transporting it onto a different platform, kind of an iPhone, iPad scenario. That's very doable today. So the cost continues to be a real value for the customer because non-recurring is down. And then if you look at Phantom Eye, it brings such a step function difference in capability than what exists in any platform today, I think we're extremely well positioned.
You mentioned 737 specifically. I know Boeing had made a very aggressive push into the Joint Stars marketplace a couple of years ago. It seems as though the Air Force has indicated a little bit of a hesitancy to move forward with a new platform and just sort of keep the status quo with Joint Stars, not even really re-engineering them. Where does that take your campaign?
We're continuing to press across the board with 737 as a replacement option for a multitude of 707 platforms today. The customer is rightfully so taking its time, looking at what will happen over the next 6 months. We've been very engaged in providing them with alternatives, what we believe are very good cost-value propositions because of the commercial derivative opportunity, where you can take place of already sunk investment from a NRE perspective, and also you can take advantage of the support infrastructure that exists worldwide today with the 737. So no success yet, but very good discussions with our customers, and we're pretty bullish on that opportunity.
Zach Biggs, Defense News. You mentioned earlier some of the pressures on customers that might be causing them to look at upgrades as opposed to new platforms. You also mentioned some of the R&D spending that has pushed new sensor capabilities, et cetera, for some of those customers. How do you weigh increasing that market opportunity while not cannibalizing the opportunity for new platform sales? How do you try to balance those two?
You know, one of the things that I like to think is part of the Boeing brand is the work we do in Phantom Works in the Virtual Warfare Center. And you know, we have the capability in this large modeling and simulation facility to simulate large areas of conflict. And we've spent a lot of time now on this term called the air-sea battle, which I wouldn't say is absolutely defined as a Pacific region, but it clearly informs us as to what could be a conflict in the Pacific region, and it helps us to drive requirements. All right, and as we better understand requirements, we can then take both existing systems and new systems and understand how we can best meet those requirements in an affordable way. We don't necessarily think about, oh, we're going to cannibalize this or we're going to do that. We actually start with a customer who has a mission and a need and needs a capability. And then we think about what is the most cost-effective way for them to accomplish their mission. And then we have to have in our offering a whole array of answers. One customer may have the budget to buy new, and they're looking for state-of-the-art, and their requirements are different. Other customers have the constraints of an existing fleet or an existing budget, or they can only buy, an upgrade in sensor, or they want to be networked, or they want to be multi-int. And by doing this, large modeling, we're able to drive out those requirements and help to tailor our offering, right, to what the customer needs. Again, I think you'll find that across Boeing, we try to start with what the problem the customer is trying to solve and work backwards, as opposed to saying, here's what I've got in my bag and here's what I'm going to sell you because that's what I've got. And that's really not been our approach. So let's try to work backwards.
Chris, did you want to tag on to that?
No, I'm good with what Roger said. Keep going, Amy.
All right, Amy.
I am curious, the U.S. Air Force decision to shelve the Block 30s, even though it's brand new hardware, does that act as a motivator for you with the Phantom Eye concept, or does it cause you a little bit of pause that maybe these capabilities that seemed enduring and potentially normalized might really be redheaded stepchildren after all?
Well, I think it's a combination of what Roger talked to, which is, we have an ability to model and simulate any warfighting environment today or tomorrow, which really gives us insight into customer needs, potential warfighting solutions. And when we look at Phantom Eye, what pushed us to develop a prototype is there truly is an unmet need in a wide area of warfighting for our customers. Persistent ISR, persistent communications, having the right sensors on a platform that can stay up for days or weeks at a time, and there is no capability like that today. So we're really bullish about Phantom Eye. Now, it may be over midterm, long-term, but that's okay, because as Roger said, we've got a lot of platforms today that we can continue to use or upgrade in a cost-effective manner and use technology and vertical content to really make them state-of-the-art for the future.
Well, if I may, Chris, you hit on something there about vertical content. Maybe one of you can talk a little bit about some of the growth in our vertical content and some of our innovations that have fed into our C4ISR capabilities.
If I heard you over the golf cart, we have a very interesting CONOPS inside of Boeing Defense, Space, and Security. We're blessed with three strong business units in NNSS, GS&S, and BMA, and we take an approach for new and for upgrading our platforms and capabilities by taking a very integrated approach. What that allows us to do is look at the customer's needs from three different perspectives. From a vertical content system perspective, and Roger's organization really looks at the warfighting environment different because his own products go from space to underwater and very network-focused. You look at global services and support, they're looking at it from a perspective of how do we design, develop, and produce and deliver products that are very supportable in a very cost-effective manner. And we continue to look at, from a Boeing military aircraft perspective, how do you give the customer what they truly want? And over the long term, what they want is solid vertical content that can be competed perhaps at a later time in a very efficient fashion. Airframes that are state-of-the-art and can last as long as they need them to. It's a really good value proposition for us. And then PhantomWorks comes along with that next generation of new capabilities on new platforms that oftentimes we can retrofit back into our current platforms, and a lot of that content can come out of NNSS.
So the vertical content, I think, gives us insight into the mission that we wouldn't have if we weren't, if you will, following, if you will, either the TCPED, right, the value stream, or the kill chain value stream, really from sensor all the way to effector. And I think it allows us to integrate better at the mission systems level than companies that don't have vertical content. You know, we've sort of been on a journey. If you've, you know, followed the Boeing, if you will, the defense and government side over the last 10 years, you know, we had tremendous success as an integrator. And I think that we learned a lot about operating systems and network-centric architectures. But one of the things we learned was content's important too. It's great to have the platform, but it's also important what's inside the skin. And so we've sort of been on a 10-year journey to enhance our vertical content in those right areas and areas that actually make a difference in the mission to the customer. And by doing that, we're better at integrating inside the skin, and we think that gives us a competitive advantage when we go into competitions.
Chris, Dave Magendra from Flight Global. Do you have any immediate sales prospects for the P-8 after the U.S. Navy and India?
We're not at liberty of talking specific customers, but yes, there is a tremendous interest in the P-8. It's a program that to date is on cost and on schedule. We're in flight test right now. We will be IOCing it, I forget the date, but soon, 2013. Thank you, Kimberly. And so while customers have stayed back for a little bit to see where we stand and to make sure there aren't issues with this development program like so many of our competitors, the fact is P-8 is ready to go. When we look at any P-3 customer today as a potential customer for tomorrow for the P-8.
Chris, if I could just ask you to expand a little bit on your 737 answer earlier. You mentioned that the work that you have done, the NRE that's been invested, the technology that's been put into the 737, sort of capitalizing on BCA's product, is done on that platform in a sense, and you can kind of tweak it from there for whatever customers needs. Do you think in a way that your performance on tanker and doing that in a different way on tanker will maybe close the deal for the Air Force at some point? Do you think that's kind of a bellwether for that service to go into more of a commercial, you know, system?
Sure. The way I would answer that is if you look at tanker, and thank you for that softball question, on cost, on schedule, success at the PDR that's really unprecedented, and we've got an extremely happy customer. Now, as you and I talked a couple days ago, PDR to CDR is all off the record. It's always a challenge. Now I'm putting it on the record. But it does open up, as you talk about, it opens up a commercial derivative business model that really allows us to take risk out, to lower the cost, to accelerate the schedule, and to provide our customer with more value in a much more environment where you understand risk. So it is a good value proposition. So as we look around at all the commercial derivatives that exist today, 707 platforms, we think we have an opportunity to perhaps provide the customer with a set of solutions that really, I think, scratches their itch in a time when budget really matters and success matters.
You know, Amy, we're seeing across the board a change in customer behavior where, you know, we all kind of grew up in a cost-type environment where the customer would spend literally billions of dollars in development, and we looked at the program really as a development program and a production program. And now what's coming out of, at least in the U.S., is they want to spend a lot less money on development. Before they put their money in, they want a higher TRL level, and they're looking for shorter times to fielding. So if we've already done development, whether it be in a satellite or an air platform or a surface platform, and we're through 100% of development on a similar program, and we can reuse some of those development dollars to provide an adjacent capability on an existing platform, we can save the customer development dollars. And I think that's going to really resound well with the customers going forward, because they don't have the budget or the time to market to start from scratch as we did 20 years ago.
Right. And you probably once a week when I talk to Dennis Muhlenberg, he's very clear. BCA's success, Boeing Commercial Aircraft's success, should be one of our top priorities. And vice versa. Ray Conner says the same thing. So you have this working together approach that has really allowed us to deliver to the customer in terms of the P-8 and in terms of the tanker. So we think it's a good formula that works, and it really leverages one Boeing.
All right, we've got time for about one more question. Zach?
Thanks. Just to follow up on the commercial versus defense component there, Shay Assad has been pushing for a bunch of reforms in the commercial acquisition process, both in requiring greater data on some of the cost components as well as eliminating potentially the other type process for commercial acquisition. How much of pressure are you feeling on from some of those reforms as far as being able to take those commercial products and bring them into the defense sphere?
You know, I think we're actually the bellwether on taking a military program and flipping it to commercial. And you probably have followed what we did on the WGS satellite constellation, which was really essentially a FAR-based government program. And we flipped it almost completely to a firm fixed price commercial basis. And really with Dave Van Buren when he was the acquisition exec in the Air Force, and with full cognizance from Shea, we reduced the terms and conditions. We reduced oversight by 90%. We took a significant slug of cost out. We reduced time to market and reduced the price of the satellite, all by going to more commercial and commercial-like terms. Things that the customer was buying that didn't create value in the end product. You know, we've always talked about when the weight of the paper equals the weight of the platform, we're about ready to deliver. Well, on the later WGS, and we just negotiated WGS 10, we've been able to reduce that by essentially an order of magnitude, and then that value has flowed back to the customer. And frankly, what we think they'll do with the money is buy more WGS and buy out the Constellation.
Yeah, that's a perfect example. We view it, pressure from our customer is good because it creates change, and we need change in the acquisition process. What Roger just talked about is a perfect example of where change has allowed us to take cost out and increase capability. And anytime you can reduce oversight, I think that's a positive. So we continue to engage very closely with Shea and DOD leadership to find a way forward that allows them the right kind of access, allows us to bring commercial products to bear, and allows us to provide them with the solution that fits into their cost value proposition.
We talk about insight versus oversight. And the government has built up sort of an infrastructure that is used to having, if you will, oversight, where they check everything. And where they're moving more towards a model which we see in the commercial satellite market, where it's not oversight, it's insight. So for a product line that we have, like our 702MP we sell to Intelsat, they have like five people that interface with Boeing on the entire program. As where we would have seen on a traditional government satellite program, it might be 100 people and large number of PDRs and CDRs and CDRLs and a lot of paperwork, and then that drives cost into the program. And we've actually gone to them and said, this is what we do in the commercial market for a MARSAT and MEXSAT and Intelsat. Let's take that model, because it seems to work in the commercial market, and let's apply it where we can in the government market and save everybody cost and, as Chris said, enhance capability for the government.
All right, well, we're nearing the end of our allotted time. Gentlemen, any wrap-up comments you'd like to offer?
No, it's a great show. Again, we really appreciate the opportunity to have this pavilion to be able to show you, if you will, what's inside the skin in the platforms that we build and how we provide, if you will, a complete product to our customer.
And I would just add, we've got our subject matter experts that really know the insides of these different capabilities standing around that would be happy to talk to you in more detail if you have the time. Thank you very much.
Great. Thanks. Thank you.